I'm Gene Shea, and this is Opus 101. Hi, this is Gene Shea. I'm here with sitting across from David Bennett Thomas. Do you use the middle name a lot there?
I use it for all my composer things.
Sounds very composer-y. Anyway, it's nice to have David Thomas with us. Dave Thomas is a composer, a very good one from the Westchester area outside of Philadelphia. So let me ask you something, David. When you got started, what got you involved with music? I mean, were you inspired by a teacher perhaps, something that happened in your classroom or school or listening to the radio? What were your inspirations and how did they lead you into becoming a musician yourself?
Okay. I kind of did everything opposite of how I should have done it.
How was that?
Well, I didn't start playing an instrument until I was like 16 years old. I started the piano at that age. So I started really late. I was a junior in high school. I said to my parents, I want to take piano lessons. And the reason why is because I wanted to learn how to play a Billy Joel song called My Life.
Really?
Because my friend played it and I thought that was really neat.
Sort of the switch right there. I mean, usually the parents want them to take music lessons and they say, absolutely not. I want to be a sports fan.
Everything was kind of backwards. So I can't really relate to when I have like a young student and their parents making them practice. I'm just like, nobody ever told me to practice. I mean, I wanted to learn it, I just decided I was going to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to my first lesson. I grew up in Westminster, Maryland, and my first teacher was a guy named Michael Connell who lives in Baltimore. And he was a jazz player, and I knew nothing about jazz at the time. I probably thought of Dixieland when he said the word jazz. You know, it's probably what I thought. That's
really?
What jazz
uh-huh.
was. You know? I mean, I had no connection at all to that. And I went to the first lesson, and he kind of started playing some things, and he said, I could show you some jazz. And he started playing jazz. I can show you some blues. I still remember this like it was yesterday. It's 1986. And I just stood behind him and I laughed. I just giggled. I thought it was the coolest thing I was ever going to see ever in my life. And I left the lesson.
When you said, did he take the same piece and play it show how you could make it a jazz piece?
He didn't do that tune, but he just probably just played through a standard or something. And I was just giggly. I was just like, I couldn't believe how excited I was. And I left the room and I just said, this is it. This is going to be it. And
unbelievable.
It was, I was 16 years old. Like, what am I going to do? I mean, it was like starting way too late. I never even read a note of music.
What did your folks think about that?
They thought, I didn't tell them that right then. So I went away. I mean, I had another year of high school. And then actually the summer after my senior year, I bicycled across America. And then I came back and went to a school in North Carolina called Guilford College. And not really for music because I didn't have any background in music. So I went there and about the second week, I was really into Billy Joel and Elton John, all this stuff. And a new guy came out named Bruce Hornsby who was a pop guy, but he could really play. And me and my friends jumped in the convertible Triumph and drove 6 hours to Virginia Beach and heard his concert. And I went home and just called my parents the next day and said, I have to be a musician. And they're like, okay, you don't really know very much about this. So then I went to I'd already been accepted at Westchester University, not for music, just as a general. I just applied because my sister said it was a nice school and that I had no idea what I was going to do. I mean, I was mm-hmm. totally directionless. And I went there and again, I didn't really have enough background at the point to be a music major. So I was a liberal arts major, which meant I just kind of took a bunch of everything. And I minored in jazz because I could play a little bit by that point. And I was in the practice room like 6, 7, 8 hours every day just practicing the piano. And I had a teacher named Larry McKenna, who's a great jazz saxophonist. He and another teacher named Jack Voice, who's a pianist, my piano teacher. Those two guys just got me through those 4 years. I just lived for the next time I was in their class or in their lesson.
Isn't that great when you have something that you have to look forward to? That's
really
wonderful.
Great. And then my senior year, I met a guy named Ron Thomas, who's a jazz pianist out in Chester County, but pretty well known. And he was the one that said, well, you should also check out some of these classical composers. And he started to kind of like see if I would get interested in composing as well. And I remember thinking, I don't want to compose music. I just want to play the piano. I went to him because I wanted to be a better piano
sure.
player. And slowly I just got turned onto it like through him, through his exposure to it. I remember actually leaving a lesson thinking, if he's going to try to get me to start writing this modern music, I'm not going to come back to this. This is not what I want to do. You know, it just seemed like he was trying to force this thing on me. And then slowly I just fell totally in love with it. But as I said before, like kind of through the piano and hearing the harmonies and just slowly he was kind of picking things for me to listen to that were kind of associated with the jazz players.
Right, right.
And before you know it, I mean, once the fire has started, you know, you're just kind of going through the whole –
It consumes you after a while.
It just consumes you.
Sure. David Thomas has written some really impressive pieces, both for religious material and secular stuff, all kinds of stuff, right?
Yep. I've written a lot for voice, and also I'm a pianist, so I've written a lot for piano. I've written a lot of chamber music, choral, solo voice. I've done some orchestral things, but not as much. I would like to do more, but most of the opportunities for me have been for the areas I just mentioned.
Sure. You know what I'd like to do is – I was thinking about which would be the best thing to start with to show off the kind of work that Dave Thomas does. And I would like to start off with my favorite of everything, and that is a piece that you you wrote the music to, a religious piece called O Magnum Mysterium, right?
Right.
Now, this is a piece that composers from centuries and centuries ago wrote music to the same piece.
Exactly.
And yet yours is I think it's wonderful, and I keep thinking – Now, what would – I've never heard Palestrina's version of this. Does it sound very much like the music of his era?
Yes. Yeah. So mine is more I guess you could hear some jazz harmonies in mine as
well. Sure can, yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It's a text that's been set many times by many composers. So it's a Latin text. So it's just been used quite a bit. When I set words, I just kind of go into the words as far as I can go. And try to make a depiction and like kind of like a little movie of what's kind of going on.
Yeah, cinematic.
Right. So I kind of really sort of serve the text in a way for my vocal pieces, I think.
Well, I think what I'd like to do is play the piece right now for starters, and we'll discuss it and explain a little bit that this was done by a university choir. This is the University of the Arts in Philadelphia. The director, Jeffrey Kern, and this is a large chorus, is it not?
This is a chorus of over 100. This is actually my choral piece that's been done the most. A bunch of different choruses have kind of picked it up and done it. Just recently it was done in Israel and broadcast on Israeli radio.
Really?
So a lot of choruses seem to like it. I actually got a lot of publicity from a YouTube video of all things, and people saw the video and wanted to buy the score.
I'll tell you, it's worth taking a look at that to see how – I'm very impressed not only with your writing and your – tonality of the whole piece, but the chorus is exceptional. And I think to myself, college chorus, boy, they're pretty good.
They're really good. And most of them are not voice majors. They're drummers and guitar players and everything else.
Really?
And the conductor, Jeff Kern, is just a magician. He knows how to take those voices and sculpt them into a beautiful sound.
Did they have to work on this piece for a while?
They work on it probably throughout the semester. They keep coming back to it. And so that's actually a good point because that's kind of rare. I mean, when you have a professional chorus, sometimes – a couple rehearsals at the most because everybody's being paid and everybody's busy. But when you work with a school chorus, they can work on it all semester and really get all the
– Boy, these folks got into it and wait till you hear this. This has so many things going for it. Just the way – not just the harmony and the poetic quality of it. But there's something about it. Well, I hear so many unusual things that I want to ask you about afterwards. So let's listen to it now.
Okay.
All right. This is Dave Thomas's piece. It's called O Magnum Mysterium. And it has to do with the manger and
Christmas.
Baby Jesus and the Blessed Virgin and all that. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a Christmas carol of sorts.
It is.
So let's hear that right now.
Thank you.
That's David Thomas's piece, his music for O Magnum Mysterium. And that's the University of the Arts Concert Choir with Jeffrey Kern, director.
Yes,
wow,
that's right.
Quite a piece to have under your arm and in your.
I'm proud of it. I had a great time sitting there listening to them do it. That's probably one of my favorite performances that I've had of it. Was hearing that chorus do it, but the voice, it has a particular kind of chromatic sort of voice leading little notes inside the harmonies, moving and landing on little dissonances here and there, and some of the chords are kind of ambiguous as a result of how the voices are moving. So that's something that I've studied pretty carefully, and I teach music theory classes, so I'm standing in front of classes doing that all the time.
Did you start this off when you first started working on O Magnum Mysterium? Mm-hmm. Did you work at a keyboard?
I usually work at I pretty much always work at a piano or keyboard. And then I just kind of in that case, I was just looking – I'm always looking for some little cell, some little idea that could grow into a whole piece. And just at the very beginning, it's a B-flat major 7 with the F going up to the F-sharp and going up to the little chromatic inside lines there. I think I just found those first – that first measure or two and just knew, okay, well, this is going to work.
I mean, how many parts are you dealing with here with all those voices?
I think that piece is, if I remember correctly, it's set up as SATB, four parts, but there's a lot of dividing. So at most 8. Mm-hmm. But so you need kind of a pretty decent size chorus to do it. I mean, if a smaller chorus can do it, but you're going to get like 2 people on a part instead of, in that case, there's 100 people, so 15 people on a part or so.
Mm-hmm. And when you first heard it rehearsed, did you think, "Ooh, I better make a correction here. That doesn't seem to work right, just right."
Not with that one. That's happened in other pieces, but not with that particular piece. That was...
When you write music, for instance, the next piece we're going to hear is instrumental.
Right.
And it's you even describe it as a spacey feeling, a washy opening. I guess it paints a picture, painterly kind of thing. And then propulsive. So we're going to hear that. But when you write a piece like that, do you run it by anybody after you've written it? Do you have any friends or music associates? You say, or do you have any problems with it where you say, I better think this thing through again?
Well, it's my mentor for a long time was Lucas Foss, who actually just died in February. He was kind of the greatest musician I've ever sat beside. I mean, he's just an amazing conductor, pianist, educator, everything. So I would go up and see him maybe every month and a half, 2 months, and just kind of play in my pieces and get his feedback on them. And then, of course, I had a long period of time where I was in school and had teachers then.
Sure.
But at this point, I have some friends who I'll play things for, but I pretty much can decide for myself. I mean, I've done it enough. I've been through it enough times. I've failed and succeeded enough times to know what's going to work.
Do you have times in your life that you set aside for writing music?
Like this morning at 5 a.m., yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, why not? That's a good time. It's quiet. There's no internet. Well, not much happening in the world.
Yes, it is a good time. I mean, I like to do it early in the morning because at night I can't dedicate my brain to it enough. It takes so much energy. Some people write all through the night and they start working at 10 o'clock at night. I went to sleep last night at 10 o'clock and I wanted to get a few hours in today, so I got up early enough to do it. I found that 5 o'clock doesn't feel that much worse than 6 o'clock.
No.
So I did 5 today.
This is Opus 101. This is Gene Shea. And I'm talking with David Thomas, young, distinguished writer. He's doing like some great work, who has been helped over the years by grants from the American Composers Forum. That's terrific. He's been a good friend of yours along the way and something you can lean on when you have to, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Last year I had a choral piece read by the Choral Arts Society or performed by the Choral Arts Society through the Composers Forum. They have the New Voices program where composers get their pieces played or read. It's a great, great experience for composers.
You like working with choirs and chorales?
Yeah, I really love it. I have a lot of solo voice pieces too. And a good handful of choral pieces at this point. I met now that I'm thinking about it, all this choral stuff started because of the Composers Forum. The Greg Smith Singers, who were kind of a famous chorus in New York, did like Stravinsky's music for him and very famous chorus. The Composers Forum had them come and do a reading at the Fletcher Art Memorial. I'm guessing this might be 8 or 9 years ago. And I went to that and I met Greg Smith and we hit it off and I started going to their festivals and getting pieces played by them. And that was all through the Composers Forum as
well. Wow. So it's not just grants and funding. It's also making connections.
That's such a ginormous part of being a composer is just meeting all those performers. I think we need performers.
Sure. Let's move to your – David, let's move to Recalled to Life. This is a piece – now, this is wholly original, right? There's no words to this. It's strictly your
– right.
Your germ of an idea. Did this start out? This piece is, by the way, is performed by an ensemble called Rare Scale.
Right. This piece, I originally composed it for Ray Lash here in Philadelphia, and in the meantime became friendly with a group in London called Rare Scale, which is led by an alto flutist named Carla Rees, and it's her group. And they started doing a lot of my stuff. Composers are looking for performers who they connect with, obviously, with the same stylistic sort of interest.
Sure.
Because if you're a composer today, you could be anything. You could be a minimalist composer. You could be an avant-garde composer. You could be a what does it mean to say you're a composer? So you have to find performers who are interested in the same things. And she and I had some similar interests. So I started writing a lot of pieces for them. And we recorded a bunch of those. And then I had this octet that I'd done for Ray Lash. And I asked her if there was a way we could maybe try to do this. And she has all kinds of friends in London. So we just did it over there and just changed the viola part to a cello part. And that's all it took.
This is a pretty playful piece, isn't it?
It is. The title actually comes from A Tale of Two Cities, which is one of the chapters in A Tale of Two Cities. Or I don't know if it's a chapter title, but it's throughout the book.
Right.
But I can't say that it's really overly programmatic of a piece. It's not trying to really depict things in a novel so much more than it's just trying to take that title of life and grasping life and energy and all those kind of things.
Well, why don't we check it out right now? Here is David Thomas's piece, Recalled to Life, performed by the British ensemble Rare Scale. Thank you. So all kinds of good stuff going on there, David.
A lot of stuff going on.
Really, you know, there's a little. That's an excerpt from David Thomas's piece called Recalled to Life, and that was the ensemble from Britain called Rare Scale. Rare Scale.
Right.
How many pieces were there?
That is an octet. So octet. It's a flute and oboe, clarinet, bassoon, cello, double bass, piano, percussion.
Yeah. And, you know, it seems to alternate – well, not in even time but the frame, but you know, you get sort of a little spacey, a little menacing at times, and then it gets sort of playful and joyful.
Right.
And
yeah.
You're having a lot of fun with it. And there's those piano fills that seem to hold it together a little bit. And that's your main instrument, you yourself.
Right.
So, I mean, that's –
yeah.
You know.
That's true. Yeah, there's a lot of like meter changes in the fast thing just to kind of keep it from sounding too regular. But enough thematic things, I hope, to kind of hold it together. Sort of like, you know, Stravinsky was kind of the most famous composer for changing the meters quite
a
bit.
When you were growing up in jazz, did you listen to people like Lambert Henriksen Ross and the Wardell Grays and the kind of Twisted and songs like that? You know,
I heard all that stuff, yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of little surprises in their work.
Right.
And one of my heroes was Gil Evans. His orchestrations that he used to do with Miles and then Rasputin.
Yeah, just on the train on the way here, I was reading a student's dissertation on Gil Evans.
Really?
Yeah. But I used Gil Evans in my theory classes quite a bit to look at his harmonizations.
He's one of my favorite arrangers, yeah. Anyway, David, you have you're a young guy and you have some great accomplishments so far, and how active are you these days? Are you doing a lot of writing?
Doing a lot of writing. I'm working on a new piano piece, working on a little Lucas Foss Memorial Concert for next year with another composer named Ronald Vigue, and that's still kind of in the very early stages.
Sure.
We met this morning and talked about it. So that's happening.
You must have had to meet at 4 a.m. if you started writing at 5.
And then I have another big – that course you heard earlier is doing my mass in the fall of this year. So that will be
– Is that a long piece?
It's a half hour and it's chorus with organ. It's probably what I'm most proud of is for my choral pieces so far. It was surprisingly – sometimes pieces are really put up a fight and they're really difficult to write, and other times you just kind of stand out of the way and let it come by, and that one just kind of came by sort of effortlessly.
Really? You know, I hear that from songwriters. I interview a lot of songwriters, and they say, oh, yeah, that one dropped in my lap. You know,
usually the best ones.
Well, sometimes. You know, look, I used to tell people sometimes the best ideas I get are when I'm just waking up and I'm sort of half asleep, and that particular – you know, you get up and you say, hey, why don't I do that?
It's funny because, I mean, a lot of music, you just need that initial idea – that sparks the whole thing.
Sure.
And sometimes it's the simplest thing. I mean, I had a student – we were looking at some pieces together and we were just kind of marveling at like, well, this piece is based on this little simple interval, and it's like, what's so special about this interval? But yet the composer took it and turned it into this great piece. I mean, just finding the right cell to base the thing on.
How about Bo Diddley?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, just a little triplet, a little riff, you know. You're right. Just a germ.
Yep.
And they're the things you're probably walking around with dozens of those things in your head right now and wondering. And I'm sure there are things that you have from time to time you draw upon. You say, you know, that piece, that thing that I thought of 3 days ago, this would fit perfectly right here.
Right.
You know what I mean? You're like, you're putting pieces together. Isn't that part of the
– That's part of it. I mean, when I start a piece, I always tell my students, I try to get them to do the same thing. It's just to spend a period of time where you just go fishing. Just kind of keep throwing the line out there and see what you get. But don't judge it and don't say this is terrible. Just kind of like, okay, this is today's. I'm going to try to get three new ideas today. Get them on the page. The next day, don't even look at them. Just like start again and try to get a bunch of new ideas.
Yeah.
And very often, like all these things end up kind of coming together, or most of them end up fitting together. But I feel like if I have 15 things written down, maybe one of them I'll feel like I want to start with.
Where are you teaching again?
The University of the Arts.
That's right. Good.
Yep. Yeah, I teach theory classes and composition lessons and piano classes.
Wow. Great to have you here today, David.
Great to be here.
This is David Bennett Thomas, our guest on Opus 101. This is Gene Shea, and so good to hear his music. We heard his choral piece, O Magnum Mysterium, and then this instrumental piece that he did with the British Ensemble called Recalled to Life. Thanks, David.
Right. My pleasure.
Opus 101 is a program of the Philadelphia chapter of the American Composers Forum. To stream or download Opus 101 programs, visit newmusicphiladelphia.com For information about ACF, visit acfphiladelphia.org. Opus 101 is produced by Chuck Butler. Our engineer is Jeff King at Baker Sound Studios, Philadelphia. Our coordinating producer is Jim Falcone. I'm Gene Shea. Thanks for listening.